We've been learning a Mishnah that is authored by Shmaya. Shmaya was one of the Gedolei HaTanoim, one of the greatest Tanoim who lived in his generation. He was the Nasi, his friend was the Av Bezdin, his friend was the head of the Sanhedrin, by the name of Avtalion, and we'll talk more about Avtalion next week. What we spoke about in the last 2 weeks is the two first phrases that were mentioned by Shmaya. Number one, Ehov es HaMelacha, we should appreciate the fact that we're given the opportunity to work and be busy with good things. Number two, Sino es HaRabbanus, which we spoke about in great length and detail last week. And now we get to the third part of this Mishnah, which is, if you look at the top of your sheet in the subject line, it is Va'al Tisvade LeRashus, which is a very difficult statement to translate. What exactly it means is not simple at all. And I beg your indulgence that today what we're going to do is really just use this as an opportunity for me to talk about something that I'm very passionate about. It is related to the point of our Mishnah, but it's related very much to the lives that we live, or at least the life that I live. And I thought this was a very appropriate way to bring it out. Just by way of introduction to understand this phrase in the Mishnah, if I were to ask anybody in the room, you don't have to feel uncomfortable because I also had the wrong answer. Was Herod, right? Hurdus, he goes down in history as a king of Israel. Was Herod a good person or a bad person? All those who think he was a good person, raise your hands. All those who think he was bad, raise your hands. Okay, I guess you're very well informed. So Herod was a very, very controversial figure. And the reason why I always had the assumption that Herod was pretty good, pretty okay, was because if you've ever taken a tour around the old city of Yerushalayim, all they speak about is Herod and how he built the walls and how he built the Beis HaMikdash and how he upgraded the structure and how they were much bigger than anything they ever had. And I always had the impression that Herod must have been okay. And then when you look a little more deeply under the surface, you find out he was not okay at all. And Chazal have a lot of negative and pejorative comments to say about Herod. So what happened with Herod? Problem number one is that Herod was put in to be the king of the Jewish people. He was not divinely chosen. Shaul HaMelech, as we know, God came and chose Shaul HaMelech. David HaMelech was chosen. However, Herod was not divinely chosen, and he was not agreed upon by the Chachmei Yisrael. Number one, he was not an heir to the throne. He was not from the family of David HaMelech, and normally the kingship is supposed to be in David HaMelech's family. Number two, even though at a period in history there were many kings who came from the Chashmonaim, after the story of Hanukkah, the Chashmonaim then took over the mantle of leadership. Even though that, the Ramban on Chumash writes, was not so simple itself, what right they had to do it, but at least we had two leading families in the Jewish community who had kings who were leading the Jewish people, either from David HaMelech or from the Chashmonaim. This king Herod was neither. He was actually a ger, he was a convert, he was from the city, from the community of Edom, and he had no business at all being the leader of the Jewish people. He was not agreed upon. And this became a very big issue. And at the time, Herod decided that the way to overcompensate for his lack of capacity to serve as the leader of the Jewish people, and in order to pacify the Jews of his community, what he did was he decided that he was going to rebuild the walls of the Har HaBayis. He was going to refurbish the Beis HaMikdash. He was going to renovate the building and the structure as we knew it. And he figured, if I upgrade and enhance the life of the Jews in the Beis HaMikdash and in Yerushalayim as a whole, that will overcompensate for my lack of ability to be the one leading them. And we know this works all the time. This is politics. Sometimes we have a leader. This is not a political statement. Sometimes we have a leader who makes a good decision for the Jews. And although that person is totally not in a position in which we would want our children emulating any behavior of this person, because they do something for the Jews, sometimes it overcompensates. And sometimes people are willing to overlook some obvious flaws. This is the reality. It's not a reality today only. It's a reality that always has been the case. And this is politics. My father writes in one of his Sfarim that they once asked Rav Soloveitchik, why is there no Hebrew word for politics? And he said there is, sheker. So then they asked Rav Soloveitchik, why don't we at least refer to politics as such? Why don't we call it sheker? He said, because that would be the only true thing about politics. So, politics has always been an issue. And in the days of Herod, this was an issue as well. But the reason why he had all these magnificent additions to Yerushalayim, and the reason why he enhanced the Beis HaMikdash so much, was because that was meant to be almost a way to pacify and satisfy the Jewish community at the time. Although he was inappropriately placed as the leader, Herod decided that was what he was going to do. At the same time, Herod realized, as we've spoken many times in the past, there were two divergent communities. One was, they were very opposed to one another. One was the Prushim, they were the traditional Jews, and one was the Tzedukim. Now, Herod understood that the Prushim were not going to support his candidacy, and he understood that they were going to be a life of problems for him. So he went out of his way throughout his life to persecute and to assail those members of the community who were from the Prushim. And therefore, this was a very difficult and complicated time in Jewish history. This was a very difficult and complex relationship that he had. Because he wanted so much to rebuild Yerushalayim and to enhance the walls, he decided he was going to have to levy a big tax on the Jewish community, which also ruffled a number of feathers. Why do we need the walls the way you're building them, and why do we need to pay the tax? Not everybody agreed with the decisions that were being made at the time. Anyway, this was a big issue at the time, and very early on in his career, when he was about 25 years old, Herod, before he became king, Herod was chosen to be the Moshel HaGalil. Right, so the Galil, as we all know, is in the north. My sister lives in the Galil. Last night they had bombs that were flying in the Galil as well, so now it's on both sides of the country. So we have a lot to pray for. But he became the Moshel HaGalil. Herod was taken as the governor, so to speak, of the Galil. That was his first position, public position at the time. He comes into office, and he finds out that there's a rebel fighter by the name of Chizkiah HaGlili, Chizkiah from the Galil. And Herod decides that this Chizkiah is going to be a big threat to him, so he decides to kill him. Now the Sanhedrin, who used to convene in Yerushalayim, had major issue with that. I understand that you think that he's a rebel fighter and that he doesn't belong in the Galil and that you want to eliminate him. But the only person who has a right to make a unilateral decision on his own to kill somebody is a melech. You are not a melech, you are not a king, you don't have a right just to take somebody's life without asking, without a fair due process. So the Sanhedrin summons Herod, who is the Moshel HaGalil, they summon him down to Yerushalayim, that he should come and stand on trial. Because what right did you have, Herod, to kill somebody without a process, without going through some sort of fair discussion? So they call Herod into the Sanhedrin. Somebody advises Herod that when he goes to meet with the Sanhedrin, he should intimidate them. And how does one do that? So he comes in all his armored gear, and he has a sword coming out of this side, and a knife and a gun coming out of the other end, and he has all of his medallions all over his jacket, all over his lapels, and he walks into the Sanhedrin ready for them to judge him. So everyone's petrified, and nobody says a word. And Shmaya happened to be the only one on the Sanhedrin who stood up for the truth. And after a lengthy discussion where nobody is saying the negative aspect of what Herod did, Shmaya stands up and he begins to criticize and condemn Herod in front of everyone. And he says, how are we remaining silent? How do we allow him to get away with this? We all know that he did something he was not allowed to do, and he did it in defiance, and he was not authorized to do this, and he deserves the death penalty. And Shmaya is the only one that stands up for the truth. And everybody else is playing politics. In the end, Herod got away with it. And some suggest this is why Shmaya writes this statement in our Mishnah. Ve'al tisva de l'rushes. Life is about living an objective truth. It's not about politicians. And it's not about pacifying and pleasing other people. If they don't deserve our credit, they should not get it. And if Herod did something wrong, he should be prosecuted for it. And if he deserves to be taken away, either that his position should be taken away from him or something of that nature, how dare, says Shmaya, how dare all of us on the Sanhedrin remain silent? That's sheker, that's dishonesty. And here he writes, Al tisva de l'rushes. Life is not about, explains the Rambam. Let's read it together, it's so beautiful. The Rambam writes in our Mishnah, two reasons why our objective in life should not and cannot be just trying to please and pacify powerful people in the world. Says the Rambam, V'chein ha'hivadus, there are people, you know, there are two types of leaders in all countries. Some leaders are all about themselves, and some leaders are all about the people. And the Rambam writes, when you have a leader who's all about him or herself, the Rambam says, those who are consumed and obsessed with shilton, with making the celebrities and the politicians and the dignitaries happy, writes the Rambam, there's two problems. Number one is, habitachon mimena ba'olam hazeh rachok. The confidence and the dependence that you have in them, that you will be secure and that you will be safe, is very unpredictable. I looked the other day. It was just of interest to me. When a president gets elected to the United States as its president, so he puts together what we refer to as the A-team. So I looked online, I was just curious. The A-team are the closest confidants who are closest to the president and work in the most important positions in his administration. So I looked online the other day. What is the likelihood of members of that A-team remaining in their positions for the next 4 years of this president's term? Now you're all laughing because today it becomes very obvious. You know what's interesting? I have a bar chart here that I printed out of the last five presidents of the United States. And surprisingly, the numbers are not so different with this president than they are with any other. And the numbers show that at the end of 4 years, I don't know, it breaks up here how many in the first year, how many in the second year, but the last line here, I can show it to anybody afterward. The red line is basically the amount of members of the A-team that were dropped before the 4 years were over, that didn't make it through. And these are the closest confidants of the president. He elects those who he feels that he can trust most. And yet the number is almost 80% of those people on the A-team for the last five presidents of the United States have been dropped or have left. Writes the Rambam, that's the reality. You're going to put all your allegiance in a human being and assume that you're going to be safe and assume that now everything's going to be comfortable and I'm totally committed and I'm totally loyal and I know that everything's going to be okay, and guess what? 80% of the A-team is out before the 4 years are over. What does that tell you, says the Rambam, about how this works? About what politics is all about? Is that really what my life objective should be, that I want to be with those politicians? That I want to be spending my time figuring out how to find favor in their eyes? Look what happens to those people who spend their lives doing that. Where does it get them? And the Rambam writes, problem number one is, habitachon, that to trust in those people and to have total, faithful, and loyal commitment to them, again, I'm not suggesting anyone should do anything illegal or go against anyone in a position of authority, but to spend our lives trying so hard to be in those circles, says the Rambam, think about where it's going to get you. And I thought a lot about it after there was a major news item last week when the president came to meet with 400 Jews. And obviously it's important. We always had shtadlanus. That was always a part of the Jewish life, that we tried our best to have relationships and to have positive relationships. But to what end? How far does that go? Somebody told me that last week in that get-together they had, it was $100,000 to sit down with the president for 15 minutes and talk to him. And there were a number of people who accepted it, who did it. Now again, I'm all for supporting a person in a position of authority, 100%, especially when he's the president of the United States. We should show respect, regardless of who the person is. We should show respect for the position itself and for what that person represents. But yet, is this really what we're going to spend our lives running after? $100,000 to sit with this person for 15 minutes for what? Just so I could tell everybody that I sat with the president of the United States for 15 minutes? Is that all it's for? Writes the Rambam, where does it get you? Think about that. And number two, the Rambam writes something even more important. He mafsida hadas. When the objective of my life becomes something other than the Ribono Shel Olam himself and the Torah and the mitzvot that he represents, writes the Rambam, it leads a person directly off the path. He mafsida hadas. Ki lo yashgiach ela b'mashi karvehu elav. Because all that becomes important to me, says the Rambam, is how close I am, how well connected I am. And I'm willing to go to great lengths to make sure that I have those connections and to make sure that I have that protection. And the Rambam says it could drive a person to do so many things wrong. Look what happens. And we all know it's true. And the Rambam says we need to be very careful. Says the Mesilas Yesharim number Beis, Kach sichluso mafsid oso. One's moral compass and regular intelligence and mind that used to think in a very straight way. Ha-hasmada ben hasarim ve'anshe ha-gedolos ha-rodfim achar ha-kavodu marbim ha-hevel. Says the Mesilas Yesharim, if so much of my life is trying to just figure out how I can be close and in those circles with those kinds of people, says the Mesilas Yesharim, that is something that can be mafsid oso. That's something that can make your moral compass become non-existent. Because at that point, everything in my life is about how I'm going to make sure that I'm going to be in this place and what lengths I'm willing to go to figure out how I'm going to be considered somebody important because I spend time with important people. Writes the Mesilas Yesharim, somehow it clouds so much of our decision-making process. And you can look in the news all the time at the corruption that people are willing to be involved with just to make themselves seem so important and to be with people that they don't belong being with. And these are the penetrating words of the Rambam. This is the way he explains our Mishnah. The Chovos HaLevavos, a very important sefer in Jewish philosophy and Hashkafa, written by Rabbeinu Bechaya Ibn Pekuda, not to be confused with the other Rabbeinu Bechaya, who was also very famous. This was written in the 11th century. The Chovos HaLevavos writes, look together in number Gimel, Haboteach be'elokim. If somebody puts their dependence in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is the objective of my life, Yivi enu havtachaso elav shelo yavod zulaso. If that's the objective, that's what I care about, I won't care about so much of this other nonsense that we get stuck with. And he writes, Shelo yikave le'ish v'lo yiyache levnei adam. I was always amazed. I grew up in my father's home. My father is one of those leaders who stands up for the truth. He's not a politician. He never wanted to be. He never will be. And as much as sometimes it's hurtful, because you get hit for not always being the politician that others want to be, I knew that he always stood up and will continue to stand up for the truth. He's a man of integrity. Because what matters to him is, what the Chovos HaLevavos writes, what matters to people like that is the truth, is the Ribono Shel Olam. And it doesn't matter to me how important somebody is. I remember my father used to tell us a story growing up, how he had a student in his class whose father was a multimillionaire. And my father said that on one occasion he bumped into this father. He wasn't so friendly with him, but he bumped into this father, a very famous person. He bumped into this father at a wedding of one of the fellow students in the shir. And he came over to my father and he said, I want to thank you. My father said, why? He said, because you failed my son on his test, the first one he took in your class. And you're the first person to ever let my son know that just because he's my son doesn't mean he has to get 100 on every test. And my father said, why would I pass him? He didn't even understand. If he failed, he failed. What's the difference? What do I care who his father is? That, says the Chovos HaLevavos, is an honest person. What matters to me in life is not whether or not the influential and famous and wealthy individual in the neighborhood is going to think highly of me. It makes no difference. I don't care. That's not what life is about. Says the Chovos HaLevavos, life is about the objective truth. And if it's about the objective truth, that means lo yiyachel levnei adam, I'm not waiting for the recognition of other people. Lo yavdom lehisratzos aleihem, I will not subject myself to make myself dependent on them. I will live a life of the objective truth. And says the Chovos HaLevavos, that is real life. There's a Gemara Maseches Tainis where we're told that Shiva Asar B'Talmud, as we know, is one of the days on the Jewish calendar that goes down in all of history as a terrible day in Jewish history. And the Gemara in Tainis tells us five reasons why we mourn on Shiva Asar B'Talmud. Five different things happen. So I remember seeing once Rav Hirsch has a penetrating insight in one of his Svarim B'Magaleh HaShanah. I just couldn't locate it yesterday when I got home from this conference. So Rav Hirsch writes in one of his Svarim that it's very strange because the Gemara also tells us Hamisabel al meso yoser midai. You ever came across somebody who suffers a loss and they just again, life will never be the same after we suffer a loss, but in some way they have to slowly get back to the Shigrat HaChaim. That's why Chazal instituted that we have Shiva, Shloshim, Yud Beis Chodesh, to slowly ease ourselves back into life. And again, life will never be the same. Life can never be the same. We lost somebody who we're so close with, but at the same time, we have to get back to ourselves. That's part of the process of life. Unfortunately, we have ups and we have downs. So the Gemara says, Hamis Abel al Meso Yoser Midai. If somebody just can't seem to move on, and they just get stuck in that, and I would say today we would refer to that as severe depression. Somebody who suffered a loss and just can't move on at all after a certain amount of time, the Gemara says it's not a positive thing. So Rav Hirsch writes, why does the Gemara say that we should still observe Shiva Asar B'Tammuz? And the Gemara goes out of its way to tell us the five reasons why we mourn on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Why is that relevant? It's thousands of years later. It's not relevant. And it goes against the principle that the Gemara teaches us that it's inappropriate to be Mis'abel Yoser Midai. You shouldn't overdo it. Don't go to the extreme. So what does it mean? And Rav Hirsch writes, perhaps if you look at that Gemara, each of the five reasons that are mentioned in the Gemara really play themselves out in different ways in our generation as well. Now, just to give a historical context, Rav Hirsch was fighting against the Reform movement, and he was one of the really staunch fighters against it. And his students really continued on in that legacy, the Aruch Laner and a number of others, really tried to uphold his theology at a time when in Europe life was not simple at all for religious Jews. And Rav Hirsch writes there, one of the things that the Gemara mentions is, He'emidu tselem b'heichel. That on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz they took an idol and they put it into the heichel. The heichel was the most important place in the Beis HaMikdash. So that's a terrible tragedy, but says Rav Hirsch, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash today. We don't have an idol and we don't have a heichel. So what are we crying about? Why is that such a tragedy today? And Rav Hirsch says, because we still continue to put Etzelem B'Heichel today. Not in the literal sense, but in the figurative sense. We all have holy spaces in our lives. And how do we fill those spaces, writes Rav Hirsch? So often the priorities that we think are most important for us, that fill and occupy our minds or our lives, are Etzelem B'Heichel. They're absolutely wrong. And we all know it, but it's just too hard to break the trend. And writes Rav Hirsch, that's why we still mourn the loss that happened on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, because it's still relevant. Because unfortunately, we as human beings still sometimes make that mistake of putting a tselem b'heichel in the most wonderful and sublime experiences that we should be able to have. Sometimes the priorities that we put in front of us are so off base that it's almost as if we're putting Etzelem B'Heichel in our holiest places, in our most important places of our lives. We all remember the financial crash of 2008, and yes, even I was old enough to remember it. And at the time, there was an amazing article that was published by Andrew Neff. I don't know if anyone knows Andrew Neff from TNEC. He's a wonderful person. And he published an article at the time that I have thought about many, many times since then. And Andrew Neff was one of the people who worked in Bear Stearns. And Bear Stearns, if you remember, basically collapsed, not over time, but basically overnight. And he wrote an incredible article that was referred to as From Bear Stearns to Bava Metzia. So it was a cute title. You can all Google it. You'll find it very easily. It was very widely distributed. But I'm just going to read certain selections of what he writes here, because he talks about priorities. He talks about what he learned from the experience of losing everything that he knew to be his reality of life and how that changed overnight to make him have a new understanding of what life is all about. So let me just read you a few snippets from what he says. The title of this article is From Bear Stearns to Bava Metzia, but it's really about some life lessons I've picked up over the last few months since my company that I was with for 20 years and that was in business for 86 years disappeared in the midst of a financial crisis and panic, making me a Bear Stearns refugee. When Bear Stearns collapsed, it shocked the world. It was not the normal course of events. Companies that are in business for 86 years without so much as losing a quarter don't go out of business, and they certainly don't go out of business overnight. I have been amazed at the level of fascination with our demise and the circumstances surrounding our last days. Many people have asked me if I knew or sensed what was happening at the time. Actually, it was just the opposite. We knew we were having a bad year, But we were in cyclical business. We've had good years and bad years. In fact, my area equities was having a very good year, and the firm was profitable again, highlighting the strength of our business model. We just were not going to ever go out of business. But then we did. We went out of business. And whose fault was it? Was it our new CEO? Was it the old CEO? The shorts? Was it the press? Until the demise of Bear Stearns, I knew what my schedule was going to be more or less for the next year or so. I was working on projects through the year 2010. I was firmly in control and I knew what the future would be. But it was not to be. I learned that I was not in control. For many of us, we went through Lahavdil, many of the signs associated with Shiva. We were in denial. We were angry. We were depressed. Finally, we began to accept our situation. I too went through these stages. I was in denial. I was angry. I was depressed because I was not in control. I'm past that now, but I was only able to get beyond it because I came to realize who really is in control of my world. The events at Bear Stearns are part of his plan. You can be angry with his plan, but it does not change his plan at all. I'm going to skip a lot from what he writes and move on to the part that I think is relevant to our discussion. I was on Wall Street for 25 years, including 20 years at Bear Stearns. I had some great calls and made people a lot of money. I was on the Institutional Investor All-Star Team for 16 years, the Wall Street Journal All-Star Team for 9 years. Wall Street is a great place to have a career, especially from a financial standpoint. Moreover, there is a great prestige that is associated with Wall Street and the power and so on and so forth. So what's wrong with that? Listen to this insight. In Pirkei Avos Perek Daled, the first Mishnah, Ben Zoma asks, who is wise? And he answers, the person who learns from everyone else. Who is strong? The person who controls himself. Who is rich? The person who is happy with what he has. Who is honored? The person who honors other people. What is it that ties all these comments together? And I think he makes a profound insight here. I never thought of this. What ties them together is that each of these midos, wisdom, strength, wealth, and honor, can only come from you. No one else can really provide it for you, because if you depend on others for these attributes, then they will all go away when the external forces and the people go away. It's a very powerful insight. There is a cost to being on Wall Street, and probably in other high-end power positions as well. You lose complete track of your priorities. You live with so much stress all the time that you don't know any longer what it means to live life without stress. The analogy I use is of a scuba diver who lives from oxygen tank to oxygen tank, not realizing that all the oxygen in the world is available to him just 5 feet above the surface of where he is right then. There is a Gemara Maseches Pesachim that says, Olam hafech ra'isi, that in Olam haba we see that the world to come is inverted from this world that we live in today. That was a hard Gemara for me to understand until I left the high-powered world. In that world, what you think is important loses its importance. The things I feared losing the most were the small things, a secretary, the car services, etc. The things I had given up most easily was time. Time with my family, quality and quantity time, and that I realize has the most value in life. I'm not saying that effort is not required and that you should not devote time to your work, just that there are ways to do it without stress. And much of it seems so unimportant in retrospect. And also, as we saw in the comments on B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, you need to make sure that you always keep your priorities straight. You can all look up that article to read it in full, but I think his message is powerful. Reb Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht, the former Rosh Yeshiva of Keren B'Yavne, he's the uncle of Reb Meir Goldwicht. So he has a mashal that he quotes from one of the Gedolim in Europe, where he says there was a king who had a horse, and he had to travel somewhere for an emergency meeting in the middle of the night. So he left his horse with whoever it was that was supposed to look after it. It was a very simple person who was supposed to be looking after. And in the middle, the king got nervous. Maybe he's not looking after it properly. Maybe he fell asleep on the job. So he leaves the meeting, he goes outside, and he sees that this watchman is still awake. And he says, can I have a few minutes with you? He says, sure. So he says, you know, what are you thinking about right now? And the man says, you know, I'm wondering, every time you bang a nail into a piece of wood, where does the wood go that gets knocked out? I'm just curious. And the king says, it's a really good question. You should spend the rest of the night trying to figure it out, trying to keep himself awake. Comes back 2 hours later and he asks him, so what are you working on now that you figured out the old problem? He says, you know, keep wondering, when a baker makes a donut, like, where, what happens to the middle? Where does the hole go? Like, how does it disappear? So if you live here, you know that Zeppelis are what we do with donut holes. But what does everyone else in the world do with them? So the king is very happy. Oh, you should work on that question. A very important philosophical question. A couple of hours later, he comes out and he says, what are you working on now? He says, you know, I was so busy thinking about the donut hole and thinking about what happens to the nail when you push it through the wood. Now my question is, where's the horse? So, Rav Goldwich writes that sometimes we confuse the emsai with the matara. Sometimes we focus so much on the means that we totally forget about the end. So the means here was, how am I going to figure out how to make sure this guy stays awake the whole night? But why is he staying awake? Nobody reminded him that he's staying awake to watch after the horse. And sometimes he says, we laugh, but it happens all the time. So he gives an example. A couple gets married and they're so excited and they have these dreams and aspirations of what kind of family they're going to build and grow together. And they decide they're going to have the perfect family. I don't know what the perfect family is, but they're going to have a certain number of children. And in order to properly take care of these children, we're going to have to buy a house. And the house is going to have to be this kind of house. So they buy that house and then they realize, we really don't have money to afford this house. So we got to go get a second job. So he gets another job. And then once they have enough money to refurbish the house, then they start adding couches and this piece of furniture and that. And then we're going to have to paint this and paint that. But now we ran out of money again. We can't finish the job. So he has to work overtime and everything. And he says, by the time you're finished with all this, the guy's never actually in his house to enjoy what he's working so hard for. So don't laugh. This happens to so many members of our own community, that we're working so hard to provide for ourselves that we can't even be ourselves. And says Rav Goldwicht, sometimes we confuse the emsai, the means, with the end. And we totally forget, I have to recalibrate, I have to figure out, what am I working toward? What exactly is the goal? What am I trying to accomplish? What am I doing? So, my birthday is on Tu B'Shvat. My bar mitzvah parsha was Parshas Yisro. And the Haftorah of Parshas Yisro is actually an amazing Haftorah. The first time I learned it was at my bar mitzvah, so I know it a little bit. And this is a Haftorah from the Navi Yeshaya. So we are familiar with Yechezkel, who has this vision of the Maisa HaMerkava, which is one of the greatest visions. What is far less well known is Yeshaya HaNavi also had his mini Maisa HaMerkava. He also had a tremendous insight into what goes on in God's world, in the upper worlds, and he's overwhelmed by it, but people don't really study it so much. So let's just look at this for a few minutes. The Navi Yeshaya writes, and Rashi explains there in Yeshaya, that although this is Perek Vav, although this is the sixth chapter of the Navi Yeshaya, this really was the first nevuah that Yeshaya HaNavi ever had. This is the first vision, which is amazing. A very powerful and overwhelming experience that he had. Divine imagery. So, we're told, Bishnas Mos HaMelech Uziyo. That's just historical context. That's when this happened. It was the year that Uziyahu passed away. And Yeshaya describes, Ve'er'eh es Hashem Yoshev al Kisei Ram V'nisa. All of a sudden, God allows me this unbelievable image. He invites me into His world, and I see God sitting on this tremendous Kisei HaKavod, on this throne, Vishulav Mele'im es HaHeichal. And God's Shulav is His feet, His legs, whatever it means. His presence, basically, is filling up the entire space, the whole area. Then I notice, Srafim Omdim Mimalo, says the Navi Yeshaya, I see that there are angels hovering above God's presence. Shesh Knafayim La'achad. Each one of those angels has six wings. Bishtayim Yechaseh Panav, Ubishtayim Yechaseh Raglav, Ubishtayim Yofef. Although the angel only has six wings, he only uses two of them to fly. Very curious pasuk. What exactly does it mean? The best interpretation that I ever heard, not that I did so much research, but for anyone who is familiar with the Queens community, there was a great tzaddik whose name was Mr. Cooperman. Anybody knows who he was? He was a great person. So he passed away a number of years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, something like that.
Probably 4.
So he was very close with my father. for many, many years. They were very close. He was a Holocaust survivor. He was a tremendous Baal Chesed, an unbelievable Baal Tzedakah, a really special person. So I went to his Levaya, because we grew up knowing Mr. Cooperman for many years. And one thing that was very unusual at the Levaya was that when the rabbi got up to give a hesped, one of the rabbanim, he, instead of giving a hesped on Mr. Cooperman, he gave a hesped on my father. It was awkward. And he said that he's going to talk about how much appreciation Mr. Cooperman had for his Rebbe, my father. So one of the things that stuck out to me was, it was beautiful words, but a little strange to be there. So one of the things that he said was a vart that Mr. Cooperman told him in this pasuk. So he asked Mr. Cooperman once, why do you go to Rabbi Schechter Shir in Queens every week, right? Your father goes, why do you go to Rabbi Schechter Shir in Queens every week? Like, what do you see in him? So he said, I'll tell you, the pasuk says here that an angel has six wings, but he only flies with two. So he said, that's the way a leader needs to be. He needs to have the ability, he has to have the knowledge, six wings, totally from another world, but he has to be able to bring it down to only fly with two of them. Because he has to be able to bring down the messages to the people that he's communicating with that they can handle. If he's going to blow out all of his six wings on them, it's never going to work. So you have to know how to consolidate your thoughts, how to figure out. That was a beautiful insight. So that was from Mr. Cooperman. Other than that, I don't know exactly what this means, but it says the vision of the angels that he saw at the time was that they had these six wings and he sees them hovering over HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then he says, V'kara ze'el ze'vi amar kadosh 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 Hashem tzevakos meloch al aretz kevodo. He hears them start to sing Shira and he's overwhelmed by this unbelievable scene. V'yanu anos asipim mikol ha'korei v'habayis imalei ashan. All of a sudden the whole space fills up with smoke. And what does he say? Here's the important line. V'amar, oi li ki nidmesi. I'm afraid, says Rashi. Ki ish t'meis v'asayim anochi v'socham t'meis v'asayim anochi yoshev. What is this? How did God allow me to see him? When Moshe Rabbeinu asked to see the presence of God, we know the Ribbono Shel Olam says no. V'ra'isa el sachorai. Was I supposed to cover my face? Was I supposed to go out of the room? Was I supposed to turn around? And Yeshaya HaNavi is petrified. Oy li ki nidmesi, did I do something wrong? Maybe I shouldn't have been here. And he's very shaken up. Writes the Dubna Magid, we'll skip down to the other side of the page. Says the Dubna Magid, what does he mean when he says, oy li ki nidmesi? Rashi explains the simple interpretation is he was afraid. Am I going to be killed because I just had an insight into the vision of what it means to be God? Is that what Yeshaya means? Perhaps, but says the Dubna Magid, it means something so much more than that. And he gives a mashal as he often did. Lahamtik maimer ze emshalacha mashal lemozeg. Mozeg is a bartender. Yoshe bekfar, very simple Jew living in a small village. Shalom lamad rak ha-sefer tse'enu re'ena. Anyone who had European parents knows about the sefer tse'enu re'ena, which is a beautiful sefer. And what is it? It's stories, agadata stories from Chazal. Beautiful. So this Jew was blessed enough that he knew how to read the tse'enu re'ena. He at least went to school. He knew how to read Hebrew. You know what his very special quality was? That he knew, because he knew how to read Hebrew, and the Tzana Rana, he also knew how to read the Hebrew calendar. But nobody else in town knew how to do that. All the illiterate Jews who lived in his village, they used to come in with very complicated shilas. Every day they would come to shul and say, did we say Mashiv HaRuach today? Are we supposed to say Yalav Yava today? Is today Rosh Chodesh? Is today Sukkot? Is today Pesach? Nobody knew anything. And he seemed like this big Talmud Chacham. Somehow he knew the answers to everything. Anytime somebody had one of these very earth-shattering questions, such as, when is Rosh Chodesh? He would look in the calendar, he would answer their questions. One day he comes home, Vayomer Elishto, he says, you know, Shiminas Asher Asaper Elecha Chadashos. I have something very important to tell you, something I've never shared. Vatomer, and she says, Tov Anochi Shamas. I'd like to hear. What do you want to tell me? Vayomer Ele, he says, you know, when we got married, you have no idea what a catch you got. You know, you thought I was a simple bartender in this village. You have no idea what a genius I am. And what a great Talmud Chacham I am. You should see what goes on in Shul. Come tomorrow morning. And watch how they line up, asking me questions. I'm able to fire off the answers to all them. You really had no idea who you married. And Vatishaleu Lemar, Ve'echachan Isvada Lecha Hadavar Hayakar Hazeh, what just made you come to this realization? How do you know? Vayomri Leh, he says, Lo Pam Velo Shtayim, this didn't just happen once. Hikshavti Ve'eshma Mipi Kol Toshvei Kfar Zeh, all the members of this neighborhood come, line up to ask me questions. And somehow I know the answers. So, I must be much greater than I thought. And over time, he starts believing this. Then the Dibna Magid writes, he goes on a trip with his wife to another community, and he's looking for a minyan for Mincha. So he walks into the closest shul, which was a Beis Medrash, and he hears people, he hears the Daf Yomi Shir going on there, he hears real learning going on, and he has no idea what's happening. He can't even understand the words that they're saying. And it finally hits him, wow, that was such an illusion. Wow, I was living in this fantasy world that really was not real at all. And it doesn't hit him until he sees something else. Says Yeshaya HaNavi, here I am living in this world, and I'm convinced that I'm a really good person. And I'm convinced that I'm something really special. And then suddenly, I'm exposed to greatness. And I see what real greatness is. And I say, Oy li ki nidmesi. Nidmesi means dimyon. I'm living in a fantasy. I'm living in an illusion. And I realize everything, all of my preconceived notions are wrong. And everything I thought about myself was not real. It was just people convincing me. It was the people I surrounded myself with that made me feel this way. And I realize that it's all fake. And I realize it's all a mirage. It's all a delusion. And there's nothing real about it. Says Yeshaya HaNavi, every so often in life you have those moments when you say to yourself, Oy li ki nidmesi, wow, was I wrong? What an illusion. Nothing about what I expected to be the reality is real. I put an investment in this firm and wow, what an illusion I was in. You talk to people, I spoke to members of our community who lost money with Madoff, and they described to me what it was like. You had this image in your head that this person was the mogul of Wall Street and he was able to do everything, and all of a sudden just comes crashing down in front of your eyes in 1 second. And you realize the reality that I thought was the reality of my life is so fake. And it's all just a delusion. And it's all a fantasy. And that's what Yeshaya HaNavi says. If we fast forward a few weeks in the parsha, we're going to read the story about Yosef and his brothers. And it's a very painful story, and every time we read it, I don't know, I get very emotional when I read that story. It never gets old. And it's such a sad story to put ourselves back into. And the very beginning of that trouble that Yosef has with his brothers, we read about how one fine day Yosef is home with his father taking care of him, and Yaakov turns to him and he says, I'd like you to go out and check on your brothers and see what's happening. So Yosef ventures out very innocently, and the Torah says a man finds him. So Rashi says it was a malach, but somebody bumps into him. And when Yosef is found, he's wandering in the field. He's disoriented. He doesn't know where he is. And this man asks him, what are you looking for? Where are you going? You just look like you're aimlessly wandering around the world. And Yosef naively responds, Esachai anochi mevakesh, I was asked to look for my brothers. Hagidana li eifahem roim, maybe you can help direct me. Where are they? I have no idea where they would be right now, and I'm just curious. My father asked me to look for them. So, very nice. Nice story. But the Kotzker Rebbe, he has such penetrating insights. Very short, very cryptic, but always penetrating. So the Kotzker Rebbe says, why does the Torah share this story with us? What is the point? And he says, because the Torah is speaking to us. And the Torah is saying that there are times when we live in this complicated and confusing world, and we are that person, vihine toe basad. I feel like I'm aimlessly wandering around. I don't even know where I'm going anymore. I don't know what the objective is. What is the purpose? What is the point of the life that I'm living? Why am I here? And sometimes we get so lost in the confusion of the expectations of our community that we get so caught up in it that we don't remember anymore. What is the point? I think about it often. You know, people make simchas. And we speak to some of the people of this neighborhood on a very personal level. And I love that. And it's special to me that we have relationships with a lot of members of the community. But sometimes they share with you what's really going on inside. So you make a blowout, beautiful simcha, and you can't pay for it. And you have so much anxiety and you have so much pressure to live up to this standard that is not your reality, that is just not you. And I sometimes ask myself when I listen to this, I feel bad for you, but this was supposed to be a simcha. Do you remember? This was meant to be a simcha, the happiest time of your life. And look how sad you are. Look how upset you are over how you went about preparing this and arranging it. It's so pathetic. And it's because a person doesn't bother to ask themselves along the process, Ma tevakesh? What is my objective? What is the goal? What is my ambition? What am I trying to accomplish? What am I trying to do? And because of that, we're just toa basada. I'm wandering around and I have to get this caterer and that thing and I have to have these flowers and this kind of gown and everything that I can't afford and everything that's not going to make me happy, all because this is what everybody around me tells me I need. And I finally wake up and I say, Oy li ki nidmesi. How sad, this is all an illusion and it's not making me happier. And instead of the moment of my life that was supposed to be the greatest moment of simcha, look what it's turned into. A tragic moment of my life where I'm going into debt. How upsetting is that? Is that really what God wanted us to feel when we celebrate a milestone in our lives? Can't be. And the problem, writes the Kutzker, is that we don't often enough bother to stop and ask that question that the Ish asks Yosef, Ma tevakesh? What are your aspirations? Where are you going? What is the point of everything you're trying to accomplish? Is there a point? Do you ever think about it? And if there isn't, it's time to reevaluate where our priorities are. And what is it that we're trying to build toward? What kind of reality do we really want to see for ourselves and for the members of our family and our community? That, writes Shmaya in our Mishnah, Al tizvah de l'rashus. Don't get lost in life with the rich and the influential and the power and the celebrated and the outstanding members of the community and think that those are the priorities that I need to live. That's not what life is about, because that is not an objective truth. Don't get me wrong. It does not mean that somebody who has money is a bad person. It's not what I'm saying. There are so many wonderful Jews who have money and so many wonderful Jews who don't have any money. It doesn't matter. Money is not a factor in this equation. But life is not about running after those kinds of people just because I think that they're more important. It's not going to make me happier. It's just going to make me further and further into my illusion of what I think my reality really is about. So the past few summers, my wife and I have spent very impactful 2 weeks in Camp Simcha. And whenever I'm there, I always feel it's a tremendous opportunity to spend time with usually 120, 130 campers who, many of them are battling devastating illnesses of cancer. Some of them are confined to wheelchairs, some of them are blind, some of them are deaf, some of them are on trachs and on feeding tubes and all kinds of machines. But I'm always amazed at their perspective. And every summer when I'm there, I always have a pad of paper with me and I write down the things that inspire me. And a lot of these kids are 10 years old and 15 years old and young children, but there's a lot to learn from people who have the right perspectives and the right values. And I'm always inspired when I come back because it reminds me how much of an illusion I live in. It reminds me how much we focus on all the wrong things in life and how none of the things that we really think are so important are important at all to people who really understand what life is about. And it doesn't matter to me that they're half my age. There's a lot to learn from them because they have life experiences that I'm blessed not to have. But there's a lot that we can learn from people who live that way. So I remember last summer I watched a completely secular and irreligious girl who was from Tel Aviv. One day they were walking in the campus and she was walking hand in hand with a Hasidish girl from Williamsburg. And maybe I shouldn't have, but I was so curious, so I just walked over to them as I was passing and I said, I'm just interested to know, how did this friendship develop? Like, how did this happen? It was of interest to me. And they responded, And they said, we didn't think for a second about how much our parents and our communities hate each other. We did not focus on our divides and our differences in which we were raised because we chose to focus solely on our tremendous similarities and our shared experiences as human beings. That's real life. That's people who have priorities. That's people who aren't getting lost in the silliness of life that I get lost in. And what's with this community? What's with that person? And how do we understand them? And is it really our way? Is it not our way? That's taking away oi li ki nidmesi. That's waking up and understanding life is not just going to be an illusion. Life is going to be real. Life is going to be something meaningful. There was a girl, her name was Devorah, who also had a very terrible illness when I met her. And at the time that I met her, she was already blind, but she had only become blind a year before. And when she was diagnosed, the doctors told her that she has 4 months until she's going to go blind. Terrible diagnosis. Completely healthy girl, was diagnosed with a certain kind of cancer, and they told her as a result of the treatment, she's going to go blind without a doubt. And she did. And when her parents heard about the diagnosis, her parents told her, over the next 4 months, we're willing to pay to bring you anywhere in the world that you would like to see. We want you to enjoy your eyes while you have them. So tell us where you want to go, and we'll be happy to take you. We'll go with you. And this girl, without hesitating, and when she told it to me, she didn't even think it was strange. She didn't understand what was so special about it. She said that she told her parents, the only place I want to go is to Israel. And all I want to do when I'm there is to go visit as many cities as I can so that my eyes can see the beauty of Eretz Yisrael as much as I possibly can. This is a girl who's 14 years old. Who thinks like this? When your parents are offering you to go anywhere in the world to do anything, all you want to do is soak in the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael to look at what real life is. And I thought to myself, how many times have I been to Eretz Yisrael? How interested am I in just looking around to soak in the beauty of what Eretz Yisrael is all about? I don't think about it because I'm busy getting lost in the minutia and the silliness of what Eretz Yisrael brings. That the taxi driver ripped me off, and that, you know, my apartment, the sponge is, whatever it is blocked up, and that the air conditioning is not working as well as it should. And here's a person who really has priorities, who really has an understanding, who's really living life, who really stops and asks themselves, Matevakesh, what is life about? Maybe it's easier in some way for them because they see life in the balance, but there's something to learn from people who go through that. And that really is what the Kutzker teaches us, and that's what Shmaya teaches us in our Mishnah. Al tizvada l'rashus, life is not about, the priorities in life are not about the prominent, not about the rich, not about the famous, not about the celebrated. That's not how we set priorities in our lives. It's not about how important I can be or how important people think I am. Life is not about finding favor in the eyes of others and making sure that we satisfy their expectations and live up to what they think we should be doing or not doing. Life is meant to be meaningful, focused, productive, understanding, and based on the values and expectations that are set forth by the eternal and everlasting and enduring truth that was given to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like the Chavos HaLevavos said. The Ribono Shel Olam gave us a timeless and immortal Torah that sets forth what the expectations are, what the guidelines are, how life is meant to be lived, what the purpose of life really is. And with all of this rush to try to be part of the A-team in our own lives, everybody wants to be in the A-team. Think about the fact that 80% of people in the A-team don't end up lasting. Just doesn't last. That's not a goal to try to pursue in life because that doesn't bring happiness. It doesn't bring satisfaction. And Shmaya reminds us of that. Al tisvada l'rashus. Your priorities cannot only be based on that. There's so much else to think about, so much more to consider. And on that note, I wish everyone a wonderful day, and we'll see you all again next